From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words.
No, wait a second. Okay, I found your tab.
You just got
I have to go.
Too many tabs.
It's very hot here, you know. It's 90 degrees Fahrenheit, so I'm a little, you know, I'm having my juice.
I think we'll just start there. I'm Fletcher Powell. That's Kathy Petras. Hi, Kathy. So you're at your home in Armia in Spain. Mm-hmm. We know that you are very hot right now.
I'm always very hot, baby. No. Yeah, this is why if I sound hyper, it's up to what, 32 degrees Celsius, which is like 86.9 or something. And it just happened, so I'm not mentally prepared.
Well, I guess we are hurtling on towards summer. It's June now, and so we're getting there. Summer is looming, I suppose. Looming as well is Ross Petras at his home in Toronto. Whose
yes.
video seems to have zoomed in for no apparent reason.
I know. I felt sorry for the two of you because my video, as Fletcher just said, I don't know what happened, but it's like a zoom.
It's so got a big like close up of me. It's kind of like when the head guy
on Oz. I know. As you were talking, I was fiddling with the computer, but I can't figure out why it's doing it. But anyway, I'm very happy in Toronto. It's nice. It's a cool day today.
Oh, good.
But we had a series of sunny days, and I can give you the exact temperatures and wind directions if you'd like, but I don't think you want to. So.
Today, we are talking about smushed up words. I am excited to find out what this means. Are we talking about something like along the lines?
It's a technical term,
yeah,
Fletcher.
It is. I've heard this in linguistic circles, smushed up words.
Definitely.
Are these sort of like portmanteau words? What are we talking about here?
Well, we're going to mention that, Fletcher, but we're going to leap into something else for 2 seconds. Kathy found this online, and we're fascinated by it. And it was a scientific study that said bad grammar can cause real physical stress.
You don't say.
Yeah, the University of Birmingham linguistic researchers there found a link between your heart rate and bad grammar, or poor grammar, I should say, which sounds better than bad grammar, doesn't it?
Yes.
So what they did is they exposed a group of people. There were only 41. They had no heart irregularities to begin with. I have to say that. They were healthy. And they were exposed to 40 written samples delivered as four different speakers read 40 different written samples. So it was 160 speech samples. And the errors were all different in them. And they were tracking their cardiovascular activity. And apparently... there was a significant correlation between sentences that had errors and difficulty with the heart.
Yeah, the sympathetic nerve system kind of lit up, fight or flight. But what interested me the most about this, they didn't mention it in the article, but basically when you exercise, you get your heart rate up too. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking, like, is bad grammar, is like repeating bad grammar to people a form of exercise? So
therefore, I'm gonna try this, Ross.
So I isn't going to go, and your heart rate goes up. I say I isn't going to go, your heart rate go up, and we've given you guys a little dose of good exercise of cardio.
Coming at it from the other end, I wish they would have also taken blood pressure, because it sounds like it's possible grammar is actually a matter of life and death.
So we could argue this show may save your life.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good point.
Anyway, moving on. Fletcher, you were asking?
I was asking, when we're talking about smushed up words, the technical term smushed up words, are we talking about the far less technical term portmanteaus, or are we talking about something else?
In effect, we are, because I think we've gone over portmanteaus when you combine... A word combines the sounds and meanings of two other words, and they are smushed together. Motel is a portmanteau. Motor, hotel. Or brunch, breakfast, lunch.
Yeah, you're taking parts of two words and smushing them together, and you get a third word.
But these are, these are like the smooshed example of portmanteau, where they're really smushed up. So.
This was sort of a spinoff of fossil. Remember we talked about fossil words and phrases the other week? This is kind of a spinoff because what these are smushed together old English words. So you don't recognize them as compound words. So it's two words that have been smushed together, that now we think of only as one word. I mean, brunch, we know breakfast, we know lunch. These are words, though, that like the two old words that got smushed together have been for either, even if they're still real words, we've forgotten the fact that these are two words that were put together.
Okay, the first word, Fletcher, is daisy.
Daisy. Yeah, okay. That's the little flower that we all love.
Okay, now, what is that a smoosh of?
The words that got smushed together are words that we know now?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so daisy. God, this is going to be impossible.
Well, I'm going to give you partially a clue. Do you think today was a nice day, Fletcher?
Days? How many days are in a week?
Right. So we're talking days. I assumed it would be a longer word, but okay, days, and then...
Okay, this is a compound word of days and eye, and basically because the flower opens in the morning and closes at night, so it's like the eye of the day.
Days
and it comes from Old English, dais, and then the, I cannot pronounce this medial G, because it's a y sound, dais, aye, something like that.
It would be aye.
Yeah, well, the G is pronounced... the G is an Old English G. It's spelled E-A-G-E in Old English. And someone tried to tell me how to pronounce that G in the middle. And they said it's like the Welsh LL. So I said, oh, that doesn't... So how do you pronounce the Welsh LL? So my friend goes, who speaks Welsh, goes, well, say G. Start saying G with the G part in the back of your mouth. And then change that to a Y. And it sounds something like, to me, like, yes, yeah, whatever. Let's just leave it at that.
So it's days,
yeah. Days, yeah, like days, or something like that. I'm not great at, I tell you one thing, if I go to Wales, I'm in trouble because I cannot pronounce it.
Days, yeah. You know, that was right there. Days, I was yeah, right there. I almost said it too, man.
Oh, I wanted to say one side note about daisy, looking this up. I got curious. I don't know if you know this. I know this from reading, like, you know, books, especially when I was a kid. I always wondered, Margaret, the name Margaret, who is one of my best friends, actually, Daisy is a nickname. She doesn't use it, but Daisy is a nickname for Margaret.
Oh, really?
It's like, how do you get Daisy from Margaret? I mean, Daisy, Margaret? Am I right?
It means pearl in Latin.
Ah, but no, Marguerite is the French version of Margaret. And that's also the French name for a particular kind of daisy.
Oh, that's interesting.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just so weird. You wouldn't have thought that. Because I was Daisy Margaret, huh?
Now that feels like a real nickname.
That does. Okay, our next word, Fletcher, is one that I know you're not going to get. But knowing you, you will get it. Tadpole.
Tadpole. A tadpole are the little baby frogs before they're turned into frogs. Before
right.
They've grown into frogs. And no, there isn't a wizard that comes along and turns them into frogs.
Yeah.
A tadpole. Tadpole is like a tiny little polecat. That's what it is. It's a tad.
That's very, very good.
Polecat.
That's very good.
Good.
Well, very
let's,
wrong.
Let's see. Try to sound out the first part of the word. I think you might get that one at least.
Tad?
Yeah.
Right.
Now change the sound slightly.
Todd. Mm-hmm. Toad. A toad.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
A
very
toad
good.
Pole.
Okay, now think of what do you do when you're going to elections and you do what? When you're trying to figure out who's more popular in an election,
you take a poll.
A poll is a head. Hair of a head on the top of an animal from Middle German.
Oh.
So you basically have a toad head. Which makes a lot of sense because the larva, the tadpole, looks like a big head with a tail.
Wow. So tadpole is a toad head.
Yep.
Yeah.
That
what
is
interests
fantastic.
Me, though, is I was fascinated by, like, why would pole be polling? But, of course, it's because in the mid-14th century, it got extended pole, meaning a person or individual, because it was like poles one of the sheep, of the cows, of the
yeah,
whatever.
Like 15 head of cattle. It's the same idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So then, because I must say, when I first saw Paula's head, I was like, yeah, what does it have to be going to the polls, you know, for me? Because mm-hmm. I didn't think of it that way.
Well, now we have a toughie, Fletcher. I'm okay. not sure. This is a giveaway. Whew. I'm not sure you're going to guess it, though.
Yeah. Finally, one I think I can do. Okay.
Okay. 13.
13. No. Right. The number 13.
Yes.
Okay. So I think, and I don't know, we may have talked about this before. I can't remember.
Yes. But, we have.
Okay, we have. This is probably why I think I'll be able to do this. 13 is sort of like 310, right?
Right.
Thir meaning 3 and teen meaning 10. So 3 and 10 is 13.
Yep. Very good.
Can you remind me why we have 11 and 12?
It was 10 and one left over. It was Endlothian and Leophon.
Oh, that's right. And that's the same thing with 12 because it's yeah. 2 and the leftover.
Yeah.
Although, you know what? I kind of like 2-teen better.
But I do too.
I want to say this. It says that 11 and 12 came from the Old Norse by the Vikings, but the Irish, they do say, in effect, 1-10 and 2-10, 1-teen and 2-teen.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, this is another trick one. It's together.
Ah, as in we're doing this together.
Mm-hmm.
As in... we are doing this together, together.
Good. You got it.
That's perfect. That's exactly it. It is from together. I mean, I can't even do it. It's in the Old English. Uh-huh. They think it came from Proto-Germanic and then from Proto-Indo-European. That's one, though, that you can really hear it.
Yeah.
Can't you? Because, I mean, I can't think of what else. Well, you never know, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Daisy was from Daisy.
Yeah. Well
put.
Yeah. This is another quickie, and then we're going to go to a couple of hardies. This one is goodbye. This one most people do know. You might know this.
I didn't know.
No, I don't. I've actually always wondered why it was goodbye. I don't know this.
Oh, really?
No.
It's basically it's a contraction of God be with ye.
Oh, okay. Goodbye. Goodbye. God be with ye.
God be with ye. Something like that. I'd be a disaster in medieval
English.
Well, I
told you that. When I was doing Chaucer, I had to recite to the professor. It was a colloquium, and he had to recite. And he told me, he said, I said it too Norwegian when I did it.
That's actually pretty good. But that's good.
Yeah, well, no, apparently I overdid it.
No, I would sound like sort of a you know, I don't know what. I mean, it... But at least they would probably, there are a lot of Norse, there were a lot, you know, obviously the Danes and the Norse took over part of England, so it needs to be understood somewhere. Anyway.
But the thing that gets it with goodbye, though, is the God be with you or whatever, is that it was following in the heels of good day, good evening, mm-hmm. et cetera.
Yes.
So, yes. So it became like that sort of truncated because everybody else was saying good day.
That's really cool how that does that with language. You're mimicking and taking bits of other pieces and stuff. Yeah.
It yeah. Really kind of was slang. It's to me, it feels like it was almost slangy. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
This one's a toughie, I think.
Okay.
Okay. Fletcher, ready?
Yes.
Sheriff.
Sheriff. Like the law enforcer.
Yeah.
Ooh. And this is a couple of words smushed up together.
Two words. You mm-hmm. probably, you'll know one word. If you know The Hobbit, you'll know one word.
Shire?
Yes.
Yay!
Oh, so someone who watches over the Shire or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Am I even going to know the other word? Is it even a word that we use?
If you read a lot of like medieval mysteries, you might.
I do not okay. read a lot of medieval mysteries.
Then we've got a problem.
Okay.
What's also the name of an actor who played... Superman.
Oh, a Shire Reeve?
Yes, you got it. A Reeve is in Middle English was a steward. Oh. A steward of the Anglo-Saxon official of high rank, kind of under a king. He kind of like a, I guess, a county executive or something, basically.
Wow.
Okay, here we go. This is the trick one.
Handiwork.
Yes.
I am admiring your handiwork.
Right.
I always assumed that it would just related to some work that you did with your hands.
Yeah, that's correct. Right. But then why is the I there?
For some old English reason.
Well, that is a really good answer because you're right. And we can't say anything.
Okay. Put it down, punt.
Yes. It's actually, do you know, I mean, like with German, you know how German has the like geboten, you know, boten, geboten, the G-E at the beginning of basically the G-E in German indicates a past tense.
Oh.
or an intensifier. In Old English, they had that GE prefix. The GE pronounced in Old English would be ye. So you basically have hand ye work. So the I represents that Old English GE pronounced ye, and it meant that the it was either completed or it was an intensifier, but probably in this case, completed.
In this case, it would be it's completed. It's like,
yeah, because hand ye work.
Yeah, here's the quilt that I finished, my hand ye work.
So now, armed with this new knowledge, Fletcher, we're going to go to another word, everywhere. Remember what I said about something earlier, and then go.
Something very shortly earlier?
Yes.
Well, okay, I'll tell you, before I take that into account, I'll tell you what I just assumed, which is, you know, when something's everywhere, it's all over the place, right? It's every, mm-hmm. everywhere. Where is it? Every. All of them. Mm-hmm. All of the wares. Now, if we take into the E, take the E part into account, everywhere, you know, that must, I guess, be related to that G thing that you just said.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah.
I'm fascinated by our pronunciation.
Yeah,
sorry.
Right.
That one we don't have to worry. That's not the LL one. That's just the yeah sound.
Right.
Okay, so.
too many G's and Y's and all this.
You're completely correct. The interesting thing here, though, is the G with the dot over the top, which means yeah. It was connected to the where. In this case, it was an intensifier. So it's basically saying, like what I said earlier, with it can be either a, you know, it can be in one case meaning a completed thing, or it can be also an intensifier.
Hmm.
In this case, it's like, man, it is everywhere. It's all over the place.
Yeah, it's at any time, always, ever. It's just, it's big. It's a big. When did you get, I'm just trying to see, when did it start, though? I'm trying to get a date, Ross. Do you have a date?
I think it was about 1200.
Okay. Because I'm looking at the different thing with ever.
Yeah.
When it was first used to intensify. Okay, yeah.
But the problem with that, with any of these early languages, I mean, there's so little written, and we can't go back in time and listen to them. So we don't, I mean, we're guessing that 1200.
Says you, I'm working on this, Ross. Don't worry. No.
Well, I think that Kathy is working on it. And as a proud woman.
Woman. The word is woman. I guess we always assume that it is an alteration of man.
Mm-hmm. Although, initially it meant female human. Yes, you're attaching it's actually an attachment of WYF.
Yeah, that's the prefix. Now, can you guess what that prefix is, Fletcher?
Is it related to wife?
Yes.
But this is where I get always, this is where I get into my own little head. Because the implication is that, like, a woman is sub man, you know, it's like attached to man. But if you look at the etymology, like, wife was a neuter noun initially.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
So you're attaching it to man, and apparently it initially meant either a male or female. No, the man meant either a male or a female.
Yes.
Man was a truncation of human. Man was not male.
Oh, okay.
But Kath, here you go, though, with that, though. I mean, you basically have a sort of a patriarchal society to some degree, because man originally meant either a male or female. Then man could mean man. So then you have to distinguish a non-male man, and then you throw in the female.
Mm-hmm.
So you're basically, you are to some degree subordinating the idea of female, as in male and female. You have male, and then you have a type of male called a female, you know, in that sense.
So man could mean either, but the default was the male, and so they had to add another word onto that to designate the female man.
Yeah.
Exactly. The thing that's interesting, though, there was an older Old English version for a female human being, and it was not wife man or wife man. It was just wife or queen, actually, for female human being.
Mm-hmm.
But queen spelled differently, probably pronounced differently, I would think now.
Mm-hmm.
I still sometimes, and I know it's frowned upon, when writing or something, will refer to, like, you know, man's argument with blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean humans. And I try to change it, but I feel like it's so clunky. And in my head, probably it's because I've read, you know, so much for so many years, that I think of man in those contexts as humans.
Oh, sure. I mean, that's very common. And I think it's trying to be changed now. But
yeah.
I mean, but we could go back. But in a way, you're right, that we could go back to the old days where man meant either person without any problem.
Mm-hmm.
But no one wants to do it because we're stuck now with the idea that man is a, you know, gender male person, so we can't. In ancient Greek, it was the same way. Anthropos could mean, really meant person, but then later it came to mean man. Then it became andros, which is different, but let's don't go there. Anyway.
Kathy, you mentioned that it seems kind of clunky sometimes to try to find a way around it, you know, to say human or, mm-hmm. or people or whatever. And I think that's just maybe an illustration of a transition period, right? Mm-hmm. We are making that change. But when you're in that, yeah, when you're in that transition period, things can be a little uncomfortable. I don't necessarily mean that like in terms of morality or socially, but like uncomfortable just in terms of the way you have to say things.
Although they did it with Star Trek, where no man has gone before, where no one has gone before. Both mm-hmm. sound fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Thank you. I like that. So I'll start saying one all the time.
The problem with that, though, is you don't want to say one does this or that.
I do that sometimes, and I sound like such an annoying.
How does one feel today, Catherine?
I swear to God, I did this on Facebook. It says something like when one's cats do this. And I thought, oh, good God.
But to be really fair, it doesn't, I mean, we associate it with being a prig. But it's really fairly useful.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't use it because people think you're a prig, but whatever.
I'd say it's sort of useful now. I wouldn't say it's fairly useful.
As one who uses it, no pun intended, I think it's quite priggish.
Okay, this word here, we're speaking of earlier of the Shire and Tolkien, and we have Darth Vader, who is Lord Vader. So where does Lord come from?
I think it's just Vader.
It is. V-A-D-E-R. I mispronounced.
Ross, I'm really actually kind of ashamed to be your sister right now.
I kind of like Vader, though.
I like it. It has more of a ring to it to me.
Darth Vader.
You're right. Lord Vader. Vader sounds sort of like waiter, you know, going fishing for trout or something. So I don't know. I like Vader.
Anyway, Lord Vader. Lord, we're talking about the word Lord, L-O-R-D.
Right.
What relation might this have to Tolkien? Any?
Not really much.
Oh, okay.
This has more relation to... I was thinking Tolkien when we were talking. It has more relation, actually, to a man at a bakery or a person at a bakery looking over croissant as people come in. Think of someone at a bakery in a high-crime area, and you're hiring this person.
You hire someone
at this bakery in a high crime area. It's a really fun etymology. I like this etymology.
It's very, very, you're not going to get it.
Okay.
We'll just let you know that.
Okay. Literally, it means it comes from two old English words, and it literally means bread guard.
Wow, the bread guard.
That is really cool.
But this is what I'm fascinated because bread guard, first of all, I never think of a bread guard, to be honest with you. It's just one of those things that's never, ever. But, yeah, it's bread guard.
But here's the funny thing. You just said how weird that sounds, and I did too. But then if I say, Fletcher, you're one of the breadwinners of your family, that doesn't sound weird at all, does it?
Not really.
No, and that's bread.
Well, yeah, because we now think of bread as dough or whatever. Well, I do.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but
exactly.
What were the old English words that I was never going to come up with?
How are we
going
to pronounce them, Ross? Cloth. Cloth meant bread or loaf.
Loaf, but we can see that where there's a metathesis there. Mm-hmm. We can see it.
Mm-hmm.
The L took over, you know, but it's sort of the hla would be like unvoiced L, so loaf. So it's loaf.
And then you have where, well, the thing is, though, became two things, because then there was weird meaning keeper or guardian. There you have the bread guardian, the bread guard. That got crunched up into hlafward, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which then became lovered or lovered, which is lord.
Wow.
Cool, isn't it?
That is very cool.
I'm just curious, though, when did breadwinner, if you don't mind, just for 2 seconds, because you've got the bread keeper, the bread guard.
Well, I'm going to tell you that off the top of my head, the term is thought to have originated in the UK in the 1820s.
That just came right out of Ross's brain.
It just came out right there.
Bread, in the literal sense, yeah, it was one who supplies a living, so it was bread.
Then
yeah.
There's another sense of 1818. in the sense of a skill or art by which one makes a living.
Although now, weirdly though, slang, bread, I need to get more bread, I need more dough, goes back. I always get this, like, I gotta get some dough, I get into this, comes from the 1940s. Bread winner and bread as a livelihood is back to the 1700s.
Yeah.
So, like, bread as money was from bread as bread, as was dough, which is my personal preference.
To me, the most fascinating aspect, though, is how bread, just how weird bread guard sounds, but breadwinner sounds perfectly fine. And that should sound weird. How we get into language, we don't even think of what breadwinner, we don't think of guy winning bread, you know, but that's it's what it is.
Yeah.
No problem with that.
Yeah, but
bread lord sounds bizarre, or bread guard.
Bread guard, yeah. Bread guard Vader.
Yeah.
But now, I love the fact that you contrasted the lord, well, the Hlaford, with Hlafeta, would that be? Which was a servant, but that literally meant loaf eater.
That's so,
I mean, like,
interesting.
You have bread as like the overriding umbrella,
sure.
You know, of terminology.
And Kathy has brilliantly segued our next word.
Lady. We talked about lord. Now we're talking about lady. Is this also bread related?
We're very carb rich today.
Yes.
Now, is this the word that you just said, Kathy? The one that related to servant?
No, that was domestic servant.
Okay. Well, good. I'm glad that this is not that then. but it's also related to loaf, bread word.
Good word.
Yes.
Okay. But it's not a loaf eater. It's not a bread guard. Is it a bread maker?
Close.
It depends, actually, because Rustad, we have it as bread server, but in some etymology say it's bread kneader, as in kneading the bread. So it's basically either making or serving it, but it's actually doing all the work while the guy's guarding said bread.
Yep.
The lady's been really sweating it out making that bread.
No, Kathy is right. Also, that D part opening came to dairymaid as well.
Dairymaid, like one who tends the cows or whatever?
Yeah.
Wow.
Exactly. And then it came to dairy and stuff like that too. Uh-huh.
I have a question now. Speaking of all this loaf eater I was going back to, and this I ran across, someone said, what about beef eater, as in, you know, the guards,
the etymology of beef eater?
Yeah, do you know it?
I actually used to, because I saw them, I looked it up, but I forgot now. Let me just think.
I'm sorry I asked it, but I got curious. I can look it up as well. I just thought maybe it was originally a contemptuous term.
It was a contemptuous term for a well-fed servant.
Yeah, so you
that
had your loaf eaters. Ooh, then you had your beef eaters. Get it?
Oh, yeah. Those jerks eating the
beef. So then how did beef eaters become good?
Well, they're so tough and well-fed that you kind of just...
You might not like them, but darn it, they're well-fed.
Yes, sir. I meant that in the best possible terms, sir.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petrus records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petrus from his home in Toronto, Ontario, in Canada. Torin Anderson composed our theme music, and our digital team is Beth Golay, Kate Hutchins, and Carly Cooper. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetrus@gmail.com. You can find all of their books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.